revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have another important show with one of my favorite guests, somebody who is like-minded and who's not afraid to tell the truth and to help patients no matter what the cost. And I think Dr. Ralph LaGuardia is one of these pioneers who, like I, also trained the old-fashioned way, which is you are fearless in the advocacy for your patient. And if you find things that work and that will help the patient, and in this opinion, in our both opinions, I think, help themselves, then you need to put it out there. He's a triple specialized physician in internal medicine, geriatrics, and bariatrics. He's the author of the Doomsday Book of Medicine, the Bible of Alternative Medicine, and Infected, Secrets from the Medical Underground. And today we're going to have a conversation about something that I don't think people know a lot about, and that's about hydrogen. Hydrogen, I don't know, people don't know a lot about it, Dr. Ralph, but water is part hydrogen and oxygen. But why is it so important?
Well, hydrogen has recently been discovered as a medical treatment or tool. It's the most abundant element in the universe, and it's the smallest element. It's the first one on the periodic table, as you know. You know, the hydrogen we're talking about is not elemental hydrogen, which is just hydrogen by itself, the atom. This is the molecule, which means that two hydrogen atoms together. A molecule is when there's elements combined. And just for your reader's sake, listener's sake, I mean. And so hydrogen itself, what hydrogen we're referring to today is H2, which is the two hydrogen atoms bonded together into a molecule. And is so small, it's the smallest molecule known, that it's able to penetrate in the human body. It can cross everywhere. There's no stopping it. It goes right across into the blood, then into the blood-brain barrier, and into the tissues. And very importantly, it reaches the brain by crossing the blood-brain barrier. And we'll get to that, why that's important later. But just recently, it's pretty much in the last 4 or 5 years, it's really gaining popularity. And if you go on PubMed, there's a ton of studies on it as well, all of which touting its benefits. It has no known toxicity, so that's good to know right off the bat. You know, you can't really hurt yourself with it. And it is part of water. You know, H2O is two hydrogens and one oxygen, and that's what it makes up. So it breaks down in the body, and it reacts in the body very easily.
When you say reacts, I mean, I like to call it structured or living kind of water. You know, we talk about being acidic, and from my knowledge of this, that extra hydrogen that comes in, is it a neutralizing agent? Can people think of it as a way to neutralize acid and actually, as it's going through all these tissues, find acidic products and get rid of them?
It more neutralizes oxygen, reactive oxygen species. What happens is oxidation, when tissues undergo any metabolic process and a lot of other processes, they release free radicals of oxygen. And what a free radical means is it's like a magnet. It goes around, it needs an electron in its outer shell. And so it pulls it from other tissues and other molecules, and that's how it damages them. It kind of tears them apart by this magnetic force of ripping out the electron. And what hydrogen does so beautifully is it donates an electron. And so like all antioxidants, but it is the most potent that we've studied so far. And it delivers that, and when it comes across free radicals of oxygen species, it neutralizes them immediately, which is outstanding.
So when you think of other antioxidants, you said it's really powerful. Is it more powerful than vitamin C or some of the other antioxidants that people take?
Yes, it's very powerful. And I'll explain later how powerful it is. But it also, besides itself being a strong antioxidant, it causes the body to release its own antioxidants. So if you take in hydrogen, it'll release SOD, which is superoxide dismutase, catalase, and the most important, glutathione, which is the most strongest antioxidant made by the body. And so in addition to itself being a strong antioxidant, it's causing it, it's a signaling molecule in the body, meaning it triggers a cascade of events. So it's very short-lived. When it goes in, it does its action in itself. Gets neutralized eventually by combining with oxygen species and other things. However, it releases this cascade of effects, which are all beneficial for you. So it's really good in that regard.
So if somebody is oxygen depleted, let's say they have asthma or they have COPD, are these other diseases that affect oxygen delivery? I mean, is this... can it be thought of as a way to try to mitigate that for these patients?
No. Yeah, I wish it was. It doesn't do that. However, it, for example, if you inhale it and you have lung problems, you inhale it and there's hydrogen generators that will produce it. What it does is it has electrodes, just like the water ones. The electrodes cause electrolysis of water, break it down into hydrogen and oxygen. And that, there's machines that you couldn't inhale at all. It makes oxygen gas. And sometimes it combines it with a little of hydrogen gas, and combines it with a little oxygen as well. It's called Brown's gas, but nothing to do with the color, just the name of the Englishman who discovered it. And those generators are great if you have lung problems, because you just inhale it directly into the lung where the hydrogen can work its effect. So what it does in the lung, it's anti-inflammatory. So if you have, and whenever there's lung disease, there's inflammation. As you know, it's always part of the process. But it neutralizes inflammation in the lung, and as well as being a super antioxidant. And so it floods in there, gets inflammation down, and then neutralizes all the bad things that hurt the lung. So it's good in that regard. Doesn't increase indirectly, it might increase oxygen intake by healing the alveoli, the little air sacs in the lung. But for the most part, it works its effect via inflammation.
Well, that's one of the main culprits, isn't it, of disease states, whether that's infection, things that thrive in anaerobic environments, cancer, all these sorts of processes. Is it something that the body or you could use as a strategy to keep yourself as healthy as possible? Because everything counts these days.
Oh, yeah. You know, and some people don't realize is you can overdo antioxidants. Because you need some oxidation. There, a lot of them are signaling molecules. For example, nitric oxide, which is one of the most important molecules in the body. I wrote a Substack on that a few weeks ago. That is spared by hydrogen. So hydrogen gas neutralizes the bad oxidants, but spares the signaling molecules like nitrogen oxide, which you need because the blood vessels make nitrogen oxide, the lining of the blood vessel, the endothelium. It's also made in nasal passages and other spots as well, but primarily in the blood vessels. And so what it does is it relaxes the blood vessels. And so it helps with heart disease. It helps prevent hypertension. And it helps blood flow. It helps erections because erectile dysfunction or impotence is directly a consequence of narrowing of the blood vessels in the penis. And so it dilates them as well. So nitrogen oxide helps everything. And so this spares that, so you don't want to deplete your nitrogen oxide.
That's great. So it's actually working in tandem with the natural processes of the body,
right,
as opposed to medication, which we write prescriptions for, which actually may cause an untoward effect, and then you have a side effect, which you need another medicine for. This seems to work in sync with what the body wants.
You know, what I practice is functional medicine, meaning I go back to what the body needs, I kind of reverse engineer it and see what the body needs to function properly and then provide those nutrients to the body itself. And amazingly, that cures a lot of disease, not all of it, but a lot of it, depending how advanced it is. But it's a great way to do that. And so one of the ways to do that is to provide antioxidants and things like that. But the key thing is increasing blood flow to areas and getting inflammation down. As you alluded to earlier, inflammation is the basis for all disease. It all starts with inflammation. You need a certain amount of inflammation, ironically. It's always, nothing's black and white in medicine so much as gray, as you know. And you know, inflammation helps at first when you initially have an injury. The inflammation helps because the inflammatory substances that come in help heal because it floods that area with stuff, causes the swelling and stuff, the inflammation of it, but it also causes increased blood flow, and macrophages come in and all kinds of antibodies come in, and the cleanup crew gets there trying to get rid of inflammation. But when it's chronic, that's when it's pathological and causes disease. So acute inflammation is okay. Chronic inflammation is deadly.
So when people are crossing that border between when it's good and when it becomes chronic, do you think there's some issue or trigger that stops, that doesn't let the process stop, and that promotes this chronic disease state?
Yes. And that's the holy grail of medicine, finding what does that. You hit it right in the head. I mean, that's the thing you're looking for all the time. And, you know, and we know antioxidants are key in that because right away it's the body's own system for eliminating disease and long-term chronic inflammation. But so, you know, it does that, and that's what you need. And you could provide that. And, you know, naturally we would get that in our diets from evolutionary terms. You know, we came out of Africa from a tropical environment where there was tons of fruit and vegetables and very high in vitamin C and all other antioxidants. And so our bodies developed. In fact, that's probably one of the reasons why we can't make vitamin C. There's only three animals in the world that cannot. Humans, guinea pigs, and African fruit bats. All other animals make their own vitamin C. And so the presumption is that we lost that ability to make our own endogenous vitamin C because there was so much provided to us that we didn't need it. But as we evolved out of Africa, our diets naturally changed as we colonized the world. And consequently, there is a lot of scurvy and a lot of low-grade scurvy, which is vitamin C deficiency, that among other antioxidants, but especially vitamin C. Linus Pauling spent his whole life work doing that, and he just hit it right on the head. I mean, vitamin C is so key to everything. He got a patent, actually, on curing heart disease, and in my Substack, I wrote an article on that way back in the beginning, the unknown cure for cardiovascular disease. And what he realized was that the LP little a that was elevated in cardiovascular disease, it's a marker for lipid marker, that was basically a patch. So what was happening was the lining of the blood vessels, the endothelium, was being damaged. And it was being damaged because of two things, a lack of collagen in the diet, because collagen is the main structural protein for the whole body. And collagen is inactive. It's activated by vitamin C. So you have to have vitamin C to activate it. So what he theorized was that the lack of collagen and a lack of vitamin C in our diets was leading to heart disease, not cholesterol and saturated fats. They got it all wrong. When Dr. Keyes did the studies originally on cholesterol in the 50s, he studied 28 countries. And only seven of them fit his theory about cholesterol. So he threw out the other 21 and stuck us with this nonsense of cholesterol being bad for us and causing disease and saturated fats being bad. And what's finally turning around now, not the cholesterol part, but at least the saturated fat part. But what Linus Pauling correctly presumed was that it was a vitamin C deficiency and a collagen deficiency. Once again, damaging the endothelium so it can't make nitric oxide. And when it's not making the nitric oxide, the blood vessels become stiff and you get hardening of the arteries and you get cardiovascular disease and hypertension. And so what he did was he took patients and gave them high dose collagen and vitamin C, and he was reversing heart disease and fixing the blood vessels. And so it was, you know, it was wonderful, the stuff. Then you'd think that would become universal. He actually got a patent on it. It was so, you know, and patents are hard to get for medical stuff unless you could prove it. And he had studies that proved it. But for some reason, the medical establishment stuck with the ridiculous theory of cholesterol being the problem. You know, they do that a lot with odd things. You know, for example, middle-aged women who were developing osteoporosis. For years, we were hitting them with high doses of calcium. Take your calcium, build your bones, take a calcium. And we were scratching our heads. Well, not us two, but everyone else about why that was happening. And it wasn't improving their bone structure. And there was a dentist. He traveled the world. He still has a foundation. Oh, I can't think of his name. But anyway, in the 1930s, because he realized there was some factor in the diet of immigrants when they came over, and they were born overseas and came here as adults. They had broad smiles and nice teeth. Weston Price, that was his name. And he noticed that if their siblings grew up in the United States, they had narrow faces, crowded teeth, didn't have these broad smiles, their jaws weren't square. And he went around the world at his own expense and studied cultures all around the world and studied their diets. And what he found was there was an X factor in their diets. It was coming from meat and saturated fats, and he couldn't identify it. And that was what was making them healthy and making their teeth better and their bones better and their facial structure. Now we know that X factor is vitamin K2. Everyone knows vitamin K supports clotting, but K2, which was a little known vitamin, it is very fascinating. What K2 does is it actually moves calcium from the arteries to the bones and teeth. And so my patients with osteoporosis, I give them several things. I give them K2 and calcium and vitamin D3, magnesium, and boron. Boron's also essential for bone development. And areas with high boron in the soil, orthopedic surgeons have a difficult time sawing through people's bones. And so that combination works very well, and it's wonderful because not only is it building bone, it's building teeth. And it's taking the calcium out of the blood vessels. So it's improving atherosclerosis. So if you do that, if you have someone with heart disease, besides the osteoporosis part, my patients with cardiovascular disease, I have them take K2 collagen and vitamin C, once again, to heal the blood vessels from within, and magnesium also to help relax them. And that works very well. As you alluded to earlier, these treatments that we use are in functional medicine and integrative medicine and alternative medicine, for the most part, have no side effects other than beneficial side effects, as opposed to big pharma's synthetic chemicals that all have side effects, none of which are beneficial.
I know I'm going to take a break in a minute, but I want to get your thoughts on this movement. It seems like the medication is all moving towards suppressing an immune response. Either some sort of one entity within the immune system, you know, like that locks in on something, but it's all about suppression. And is there going to be, in your opinion, some sort of untoward event with all of this affecting or trying to manipulate and control the immune response?
We're going to talk about that after the break. I wasn't sure.
That's going to be a long answer. Let's take our first break and come back. You're looking at the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Ralph LaGuardia, and I gave him a mouthful of a question before we took the break. You know, what side effect or consequence are we going to see with all of these medications for every, you know, whether it's eczema or some sort of autoimmune disease? It seems to be the same strategy of pick something within the immune system and suppress it. You know, all these ending with B words, all these medications. Is there going to be, what do you think the outcome of that's going to be?
Well, you know, it's an approach to medicine that's diametrically opposed to what we do. As a functional medicine doctor, I don't look at attacking the body and trying to suppress things. I look at building it up from within and boosting the immune system rather than suppressing it, because the immune system can go awry for sure. And autoimmune disease is a good example. The body is attacking itself. And that's a whole other subject with leaky gut and everything else. But the immune system, once again, things aren't black and white. You want a strong immune system, but you don't want it to go berserk. There's consequences to that, but there's more consequences to suppressing it. And so, like, I have a lot of patients who, you know, they have bad arthritis, polymyalgia, rheumatica, different rheumatic diseases, and they're suffering. They're in pain all day. And the NSAIDs aren't working. The COX-2s aren't working for them, you know. And occasionally, for some other reason, I'll put them on a short course of prednisone or for whatever reason. And they go, God, doc, I feel great. And so, and some of them, you know, they're old and nothing else is working. I'll put them on 5 or 10 milligrams of prednisone a day, knowing I am suppressing the immune system. However, I'm looking in this case to suppress the inflammation in their joints. And I'm very frank with them about it. We sit down, we have a long discussion about it. I tell them the pros and cons, and the cons being A, immunosuppression for, fighting off infections, cancer, and other things. So you run the risk of more of that, diabetes, osteoporosis, other problems, cataracts from a long-term steroid use. And so, the way I like to look at it as a functional medicine doctor is I'd rather boost the immune system. And so a lot of times I'll use a cocktail. There was a guy named Les Packer in the University of UCLA, I believe it was, who did a lot of research on immune cascade. And what that is he realized that there was antioxidants that actually regenerate each other. For example, vitamin C and glutathione regenerate each other. The vitamin E and COQ10 regenerate each other. So vitamin C and glutathione are water soluble. And so on the water soluble end, those two regenerate each other. And on the fat soluble end, vitamin E and COQ10 regenerate each other. Above them both is alpha lipoic acid, which is both fat and water soluble. And so I have my patients take 4 of the 5. For the years I was doing that, now I actually have them take all 5 because you can take glutathione as well. It wasn't available before. That supercharges their immune system. And they'll tell me the same thing. I'll put them on that. And you know, in fact, I just saw a good friend of mine a few weeks ago, and he pulled me on the side. We were in Florida, and he said, you know, you put me on that, the 5 vitamins I was just speaking about, 3 years ago, and he said, I haven't had a cold, not even a sniffle since then. I used to get colds all the time. He said, I wasn't real sick, but I wasn't real healthy. You know, he was in that gray zone of feeling crummy and, you know, coming down with something and, you know, fighting it off or getting some antibiotics for it and then recovering. He wasn't in the hospital or anything, but he wasn't feeling good. And he said, since he's been on this, he feels great. His immune system is supercharged the way it should be. And it reacts to all of that. There's been some interesting developments recently. A company in Italy developed NAC, which is N-acetylcysteine, which is a precursor to glutathione. And they developed an augmented NAC. And what its special use is in long-haul COVID. Because my patients who were vaccinated, even though I told everyone not to do it, they still, a lot of them do it. Circumstances had to get vaccinated for the job or to see their grandchildren with crazy children. And so a lot of them just reluctantly did it. And what I found was 62% of them have long haul COVID. And a lot of them don't even know it yet. And how I measure that is I measure 3 things. I measure D-dimer levels. D-dimer measures clotting. And I measure fibrin degradation products, which is as clots are formed, it forms a fibrin. As they're dissolved, as you know, it breaks down into fibrin degradation products. So you can measure the clearing and clotting that way. And I measure COVID antibodies. Normally, if you're vaccinated, 3 to 6 months later, your antibody levels drop, you know, from 10 to 20% of what they were originally. And that's okay. That's what it's supposed to do, vaccinations. So your body has a memory of it. And so if you're re-exposed to that illness, it'll have antibodies ready and it'll just rev them back up and your antibody levels will skyrocket again, facing that threat. The problem with the messenger RNA vaccines for COVID is that it changed our genes. And not mine because I didn't take it, but it changed the genetics of people, and which it wasn't supposed to do. By reverse transcriptase, the messenger RNA entered the DNA and inserted itself in there, that gene, and which happens a lot. Actually, 14% of our genes are from viruses, amazingly, over the years. And that might very well be the way evolution occurs. we used to think it was a random mutation here and there. It might be the acquisition of genes from viruses that are beneficial for us. And so we make it part of our genome or our DNA because it helps us deal with whatever we're exposed to at that time. And so what happens is with these patients who are vaccinated for COVID, now their DNA has a gene that keeps making the spike protein. And that triggers the antibody production, but it's chronic. And so they're producing spike protein all the time, and it's going around to their capillaries, and it's like a little pieces of Velcro spike protein. It sticks to the lining, and once again, the endothelium of the blood vessels, and damages that and causes clotting. And I know that because their D-dimer levels are up, and then their fibrin degradation products are up. And almost universally, their COVID antibodies are higher than can be measured. Quest only goes up to 2,500, and they're all greater than 2,500. Okay. And so what I do is I put them on, I look for natural anticoagulants. And so I don't use Coumadin or Xarelto or Eliquis. I use those only in extreme cases. There's three natural antioxidants that are wonderful. One is called ceratopeptidase. That's made from the silkworm. Silk moth that eats its way out of the cocoon, releases that enzyme. That enzyme stops clotting. The second one is natokinase. Natto is a Japanese dish, and it's made with a bacteria that produces this enzyme called natokinase that's stronger than ceratopeptidase, 10 times stronger than that. And so some patients take that. My anticoagulant of preference, however, is lumbrokinase. And lumbrokinase is made from earthworms. And that's 30 times stronger than natokinase and 300 times stronger than ceratopeptidase. But it's great because patients don't bleed with it. I've never had a patient yet bleed with it. But it works well to drop the D-dimer levels within range. So I keep raising it for that. And then I measure that, and I watch their antibodies don't drop. They stay up because the spike protein is continually being produced. But what I was doing is neutralizing it so it's not clotting, forming clots. However, just recently in Italy, a company developed augmented NAC, N-acetylcysteine, and they have a special process where they augment it and make it super powerful. And normal NAC drops the spike protein by about 7 to 8%. This drops it by 99%.
Wow.
They can't make it fast enough. It's selling out constantly. I order it and I have to wait months to get it. They always send you a letter and go, sorry, we're behind again. And they keep building new factories to make it. But the demand for it, especially in Europe, is huge. Here, it's virtually unknown. I mentioned in one of my Substacks, and I had a lot of feedback on it. And I have patients order it, but like I said, it takes a while to get it. But that's another way you can combat. If you're eliminating 99% of the spike protein from the blood, then you don't have to worry about the anticoagulation because that's what's leading to it.
I love the fact that you think about the cause, right? It's not treating the symptom, it's treating the cause of it. And then that's how you get ahead of it, and that's how you actually help the person thrive, as opposed to basically limping along. And we're going to take another break in a second, but one of the things that strike me about the long COVID cases is the fatigue that goes along with it. I want to ask you about that when we take our second break. So let's do that and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. And Dr. Ralph, you just gave a tutorial on things that give people hope that they can get their quality of life back, no matter what their choices are. So one of the things that strike me about people who have active COVID or had it in the past is this fatigue factor. They always feel like they're just, no matter how much sleep they get, they don't have energy. Is this also part of what affects the mitochondria and affects ATP production? Is that also something that's being affected by this, either the spike protein or actually having an acute disease?
Yeah. Well, it's a chronic disease because what happens is it's kind of have your car engine racing all the time. Your body's exhausted because there's a constant battle going on internally in these patients who are vaccinated due to the production of spike protein. So it's like they're always having low-grade COVID. and they can't get past it because they are, you know, and that, you know, it's doing the same thing. It leads to an inflammatory cascade as well as the clotting, and a cytokine storm. That was initially what killed a lot of people with COVID. And that's why I treat COVID patients with steroids as well, initially, just to, for acute COVID, just to get down the inflammatory part. But as we alluded to earlier, that long-term inflammation causes lots of problems. So the only way to circumvent that in these patients is to, as I was saying earlier, to treat the, either lower the D-dimer levels, but the newest way is with the augmented NAC. Otherwise, you're not getting to the root problem. The same thing is there. And so you can give them B12 shots. I do that as well in the office, and that helps them a little bit. But actually, ironically, hydrogen, H2, works great for that because H2 is able to neutralize, you know, and there's not been any studies on the spike protein or on long-haul COVID, but my gut feeling is that it would work very well for that because we know that the hydrogen gas even prevents damage from radiation and even from EMF fields. And so what it does is it neutralizes radiation, causes hydroxyl radicals and oxygen radicals, and it neutralizes those. And so it protects you from radiation. But it also, since it's so small, it's able to cross the cell membrane and then cross again into the nucleus of the cell where the DNA is. And so it helps protect the DNA, and it also nourishes the mitochondria. And as you know, the mitochondria are the powerhouses for energy development in the cell. Anything that affects that would leave you dragging. So what it does is it protects the mitochondria, and hydrogen gas increases energy big time. It also, that's why athletes use it. It increases their energy, it improves their athletic performance, and it accelerates their healing, you know, because athletes, all that athletic activity causes damage to muscles. That usually builds more muscle eventually, but you want to heal that, and eventually they reach a peak where they can only get so much. And so it helps them recover from a, you know, like a football game or a basketball game, soccer game. A few days later, they might be aching a little bit, and it helps that. But it also helps their performance on the field by providing tons of energy for them.
You know, it's just such a, it's a wonder molecule, really. I mean, the fact that it's able to suppress pro-inflammation, you know, molecules like cytokines and tumor necrosis factor, interleukin-6, those things are things that when you have an acute or even a chronic disease, those are running rampant in the system.
Exactly.
It sounds like it can go and neutralize them, like just like a heat-seeking missile type of thing.
Well, check this fact out. 1.5 liters a day of hydrogen water is equivalent of the antioxidant activity of 576 apples, 38 carrots, 3.7 pumpkins, 765 bananas, 45 cabbages, or 136 lemons.
That's pretty good.
In 1.5 liters. It's unbelievable. And like I said, you don't have to worry about overdoing the antioxidant part because it, for some reason, the reason is it works on a gradient. And what it does is it goes from areas of higher concentration to areas of lower concentration where it's needed. And so it's like it's almost the perfect treatment for all of that. Mm-hmm. But in addition, we spoke about earlier about different ways to do it. In addition to there's the hydrogen water generators, which are great. It's like a 1 liter water bottle. You fill it up, and by electrolysis, it breaks down the hydrogen there, and then you drink it from there. That's great. In the office, frequently I use hydrogen tablets. I'll put them in a big glass of water, and a few minutes later, it's full of hydrogen. The key thing with that is you have to drink it. If the water clears up, it's no longer cloudy, the hydrogen gas has escaped. So I usually put a little cover on the glass until it's done, and then I drink it right from there. But you could do that. You could soak in a bathtub. There is hydrogen like pellets that they could put in a bath. And so they could do it intravenously, which I don't recommend. You know, why go through all that when you can get it other ways? And so there's lots of ways to get the hydrogen that you need. The most cost-effective would be what you use, the water bottle.
Mm-hmm. I found that's been, it's portable. You can get it going when you need it. I love it, actually, and it was really reasonable.
When you talk about water, another interesting fact is that if you drink water with high levels of silicon in it, the highest in the world is Fiji water. For actually comes from springs from Fiji. That's the highest silicon content. Silicon binds up aluminum. And so they did studies in patients with dementia, because we know that aluminum buildup in the brain leads to dementia. And what they found was drinking a liter and a half of hydrogen water for 3 months caused a 40% improvement in cognition. Unbelievable. There's no medication that could do that. None. Well, in fact, as you know, the medications don't do squat. I don't even prescribe them anymore. I always just tell patients, look, they don't work. We're not going to do that. So what I do in my patients with cognitive problems, and this only works if you do it early. Once again, I go back to, I study the brain. How does the brain work? Well, the brain works, it has two different energy systems. It has glucose, like most of the body. And so dementia is, Alzheimer's and other dementias, is we're calling it now type 3 diabetes. What it actually is insulin resistance in the brain. And so what happens is, when it's insulin resistance, as you know, insulin drives sugar or glucose into cells so the body can use it. And so in the rest of your body, when you have insulin resistance, the glucose is not being driven into cells, so it goes up in your blood and you become diabetic. You have high sugar in your blood. And so in the brain, the insulin isn't getting into the brain, so the brain doesn't have the energy it needs. Dementia is an energy problem. It's all about energy balance. And so as it progresses, the brain initially, they'll get a little forgetful because short-term memory is the first thing to go, as you know. And then later on, eventually, they stop talking, they stop eating, just sitting here, and their brain only has them breathing, because as it shuts down, it leads just to vital processes. And the reason that happens is because as the energy drops in the neurons, the cells of the brain, when they make proteins, they make them misshapen. All proteins work by shape. That determines their action. So if you have a misshapen protein, it's inactive. It doesn't work. And so they make two kinds of proteins, amyloid and tau proteins. And you'll see these tau tangles, they call them, and amyloid plaques in the brain cells. And what that is accumulation of these bad proteins. So, but there's a backup system in the brain for energy that uses medium chain triglycerides short chain fatty acids. And so what I do is I give patients MCT, which is medium chain triglycerides. You can buy it online, or I give them coconut oil, which is loaded with medium chain triglycerides. And so if it's early enough and the tau and the amyloid proteins haven't built up a lot, and the aluminum in the brain, because aluminum has no function in the body at all. And so we're ingesting it in large amounts along with plastic. And that is building up in our bodies in different spots. Unfortunately, it crosses the blood-brain barrier and it builds up in the brain big time. And so you want to get rid of that. But if it's not built up enough, if it's early, you can reverse the early symptoms of Alzheimer's with medium chain triglycerides, because now the energy problem in the brain is solved. You've eliminated that, the glucose level. And so it doesn't rely on glucose. It'll switch to that for energy metabolism. And so it'll make proteins that are functional. And so it'll stop the buildup of the tau and the amyloid proteins in the brain. And then you drink Fiji water. I have them drink that to help eliminate the aluminum. And then I give them krill oil and magnesium and methylated B complex to help. All of that supports brain activity. And the reason I use methylated B complex is because of MTHFR mutations. And what that means is it's a mutation that causes the B vitamins can't be processed. And you develop with toxic intermediaries such as homocysteine, which leads to heart disease. Once again, damages the endothelium of the blood vessels. You can see how it's always the same theme over and over again. Yeah. There's commonalities to all these disease states. And so I give them methylated B complex, which circumvents that. 42% of the American population has that mutation. So it's not a rare mutation. And so I give them those things. I give them B12 shots as well in the office. And that's a much more potent. I mean, it's just cases where it doesn't work at all if they're too far gone. But if I catch it early enough, it'll work well, as opposed to these medications that are worthless.
It certainly sounds like it's a strategy that people can use as prevention too, right?
Yes, no downside. Once again, there's no downside to it. Krill oil is better than fish oil because it crosses the blood-brain barrier. It also is red because it has astaxanthin, which is a very potent antioxidant. So once again, these things always work together. Anti-inflammatories and antioxidants go hand in hand, because once you get the oxidation down, you get the inflammation down. And so the two always do the same thing, but to varying degrees. And so I like to, fish oil is great, and fish oil will work as well, but it doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier as well as krill oil, and it doesn't have the astaxanthin. That's why it's not red. Astaxanthin is what causes lobsters to be red, and shrimp, and krill, and it's made from a bacteria in the ocean in the food chain that's eventually ingested by them and causes that.
I mean, there's so many things that so many strategies. This is amazing that there's all these easy strategies. So we just have to make better choices. And thank God that you're on the show, because you're here to let us know that, you know, it's not overwhelming. It's just making conscious choices that keep you out of trouble. On that note, let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. LaGuardia, and you can go to his medicalunderground.substack.com and read what he writes. He's prolific, and I've not read any article that wasn't timely and that I couldn't use and or tell patients about. So it's a wealth of knowledge. It's easy to read. It's not super long. So there's no such better reading than reading the newspaper or something that's going to make you angry. This is about empowering yourself. You know?
whenever I do take a deep dive into medicine, I put a warning up in my Substack. Yeah, I go, listen, it's going to get a little heavy. If you don't like science, skip to the next section.
Well, it's everything you write has a purpose to it, and something you're going to take away, something that you're going to be able to use or have a loved one use.
Well, I make a great effort to write it geared towards a non-medical reader who has no medical knowledge. Otherwise, you can lose them. You know, it's quite easy for any physician to lose laymen in medical jargon. We can just keep throwing out terms. It'd be perfectly clear to us. They'll have no idea what we're talking about. So if I use any terms in there in parentheses right after it, I write what it means.
And
so
that's,
you know.
I would have to co-sign that, because it's absolutely true. You know, this hydrogen molecule is amazing. There's another system, isn't there, that helps, and it helps. And that's the GI tract, isn't it? With the probiotic, the good bacteria, which is key to, I think, brain health and GI health.
Yeah, it helps support probiotic bacteria in the gut. And what it does is, especially, for example, there's five families of probacteria in the gut. The most important one is bifidobacteria, B-I-F-I-D-O bacteria. Bifido is absolutely wonderful for human health. And, you know, I'm always amazed by the body. I mean, here I am with, you know, 50 years of this, and I still look at it in awe. What happens is that the as you digest food, as you eat food and it goes through your digestive tract, the number of bacteria is small in the stomach. There's Helicobacter and other bacteria in there, and it goes much larger in the small intestine, and then it goes really high in the colon or large intestine. And what happens is, as you eat food, as soon as it enters your mouth, amylase in your mouth, enzymes, break down food. And so as you're chewing it, it's already dissolving it. You know, it's making it partially. And you swallow it, and that goes into your stomach. And interestingly, if you chew dark green leafy vegetables in your mouth, the bacteria in your mouth will break that down to nitrates, which will go to your stomach, and the acid in your stomach will make that into nitric oxide. So there's a few different ways to make it nitric oxide, not just in your blood vessels. And oddly enough, it's made in the nasal passage too. You could raise it by just humming, believe it or not. But chewing, anyway, so as you eat food, it goes to your stomach, and it's in an acid pit. it dissolves some more. It goes to the small intestine where it's primarily broke down, and it strips out everything they can get out of it. It's taking vitamins, nutrients. It's taking carbohydrates, fats, everything out of it. Now what's left goes to the colon. And here you have fiber and some undigestible stuff that just didn't work. And the acid pit in the stomach and the enzymes in the mouth and the small intestine, nothing broken down. Now, as you go through these areas as well, the oxygen levels are dropping. And so the bifidobacteria will live in a low oxygen environment like the colon. And what it does is it ferments what's left. It actually ferments it and breaks it down that way. And so it'll break it down and it produces short-chain fatty acids, which feed the lining. Because just like the brain, there's only a few areas in the body that don't use glucose. The enterocytes are the cells that line the intestines. In the small intestine, they live on L-glutamine. In a large intestine, they live on fats. They live on medium-chain triglycerides and short-chain fatty acids, which are made by the bifidobacteria. So it makes the environment that it lives in healthier. And then our body absorbs these, and they have great benefits for us. Hydrogen gas protects that and also improves the tight junctions. The tight junctions, because there's only one layer of cells lining the intestines, it has to be strong, and they're glued together with these proteins that hold them together. And in a lot of us, because of poor diets and bacterial overgrowth and a lack of bifidobacteria, which is becoming epidemic, by the way, it's dropping every year. Those problems lead to leaky gut because the tight junctions loosen up, and leaky gut leads to all you people all of a sudden are in their 40s and they're getting food allergies they never had before, and they're getting Hashimoto's and rheumatoid arthritis. Leaky gut is large protein pieces are slipping between the cells and entering the bloodstream instead of being, usually it looks like a shag carpet, the microvilli. Around top of that, there's a layer of probiotic bacteria, and that breaks down first. And then it goes into the villi, and so it'll break down proteins into smaller peptides, and then into amino acids with MATA. And same thing with fats, so breaking down the fatty acids and absorb them. So if big pieces are going through, your body's not used to that. And so what happens if a big piece goes through and that protein is similar to, for example, thyroid, you wind up with autoimmune Hashimoto's because your body will attack itself and destroy that. And so you can fix leaky gut. Well, partially, I have a whole program for it, but one of the ways you fix it is hydrogen gas and bifidobacteria and good probiotic bacteria. But I also use L-glutamine and the medium-chain triglycerides, and I give collagen and colostrum because colostrum is the first milk of a mammal. And so, for example, cows give their calves colostrum, and that's where we get it, and that's full of antibodies, primarily to protect the gut. And so what a beautiful thing. It's full of nutrients, it's full of vitamins, rich fatty acids. And so what could be more wonderful for your health than to have that collagen, vitamins, and, you know, the medium chain triglycerides is perfect. It takes about 6 months, but it heals the leaky gut.
I have to ask then, all of this irritable bowel syndrome with diarrhea, constipation, and all these medicines, again, to suppress the immune response in the gut, is this, do you think, some sort of thing that could reverse that?
Oh, yeah. It does it every time. However, you have to do a few things. The people have to improve their diets. They can't be eating this junk and processed foods full of chemicals. I mean, what's happening is they're feeding us, and Robert Kennedy had it right. I mean, I don't like a lot of his political stuff, but his medical stuff is right on. You know, he's talking about all these toxins. There's 3,500 toxins that are in our food that are they're not allowed in Europe. Why are we allowing this stuff in? You know, it's madness. Why are we giving heavy metals to babies? Are you nuts? You know, and all of this has consequences. And so you continue to damage the gut. It's hard to repair it. But if you change your diet, I tell people, shop along the outer aisles of the supermarket. Don't buy anything in the middle. It's poison. You know, it's all processed. It's not going to help you. I mean, the processed foods are actually the designers for like potato chips and things like that. You'll never get full eating them because your brain doesn't recognize it. It's not sending a satiating signal to your brain. And so you just keep eating and eating all these foods. And they're designed by that purposely. They don't want any signal for us to stop eating them. And plus, you're always hungry because there's no nutrients your body can use. It's just, seed oils and processed foods and chemicals, and it's garbage. You know, you wonder how these kids survive. You see these poor kids eating this stuff, you know, you're eating bags of chips and soda and stuff and living on that, not never getting fresh fruit and meat and vegetables. And it's amazing the body's able to survive that long without good nutrition.
It's amazing. It's very resilient when you think about it. And so what about that? You know, everybody says they have, well, if they have a gut issue, they always say it's gluten sensitivity. Is that really a thing?
Yeah, gluten sensitivity is definitely a thing because they've designed the foods. Once again, they keep doing this to us. They never change things for the better, it seems, with food. And over the last 30 years or 40 years, the gluten is 25 or 30 times what it was then. And the reason is because it makes flour and stuff more pliable when they cook with it. And so they use it for a lot of stuff like that. It's cheap and it's easy to do. But if you eat old wheats like farro and spelt, and there's different ones, there's three or four of them, that are, great. Italy uses a lot of farro as old wheat. It's very low in gluten. And, you know, that's why the pasta tastes so great there. Mm. I went to med school there, as you know, and I used to go back to school and I would drop 20 pounds as soon as I got there. I'm not overweight. It's just that the food was so good. You know, it's full of nutrients and good stuff. And so you consequently don't eat that much of it, you know, and then what stuff you eat is nurturing your body, not poisoning it.
There's so many things that you just, in this time that we spent with each other, you don't have to do a lot. You know, it's just make, as I said before, better choices. And feed the body, right? If, in my opinion, the body's self-healing if you get out of the way and let it do what it needs to do and give it the building blocks. And you're describing things that really are not hard to do. You just have to pick the right things. Something that's fresh, organic, I would think.
Yes.
You know, that's key.
Yes, yes.
That you can make yourself and stop going and getting things prepared for you or these fast food, stopovers. They're not helpful. It's amazing, you're right, how the body can be resilient. But for those people who, you know, because of cost or whatever, can they use the strategy of supplementation to kind of ease the stress that they're putting on the body?
Yeah. I mean, there's certain things you can do. Not a lot of them are inexpensive. Vitamin C is very inexpensive. You can do little things like that. You know, and there's other things. There's little things you could do to help your health. Hydration is key. I'd say 80% of the patients I see are dehydrated. And I always look at them and go, well, how much water should I drink? And I always tell them the same thing. You drink water till your tongue is wet. Don't worry about 8 glasses, 6 glasses, 12 glasses. If you know, these people have cat tongues. They stick them out. They're dry as hell, you know. And I'm looking at it and I said, look at my tongue. It's wet and shiny. That's the way your tongue is. Look in the mirror. That'll tell you when to keep drinking. You know, and so you can do little things like that. Rest. I tell them, make sure you get a good, at least 7 hours of sleep a night. 6 minimum, but 7, 8, you know, great for you. Helps your body repair, you know, and sleep in a completely dark room with no electronics near you at all. Put them in another room because you want to shut down your melatonin as well. And during the day, get outside in the sun. You know, if you're fair skinned, get early morning, late day sun. Sun is fabulous for you. I read a whole Substack on it. Sunlight is wonderful for you. Even lowers your cholesterol, believe it or not, because cholesterol, the backbone for cholesterol, for vitamin D, is cholesterol. And exposed to sunlight produces vitamin D. And so that lowers your cholesterol, lowers your blood pressure, improves your mood. The benefits of protein, I mean, it has so many good things for you. And, you know, I always argue with the dermatologist that, oh, no, stay in the dark, you know, put sunblock on, but don't go out there no matter what. It's such nonsense. You know, I mean, look at it in evolutionary terms. We would have gone extinct if sunlight was killing us. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. You know, it's not the sunlight that does it, it's the recurrent burns. You know, if you look at pictures of old Yankee farmers from New England who are all Northern European stock, they, you know, German, Irish, Swedish, Russian, Polish, English, Scottish, they're not dark people. You know, they're not olive skinned by any means. And you look at them by the end of the summer, they look like Sicilians. They were dark tans because they didn't get burnt. And there was no skin cancer. It would have been epidemics of it here if that theory was right. You know, they were all outside. These farmers were out there. But as the seasons and the days got longer, their skin got acclimated to it. did exactly the way we were designed to do. And so there was no skin cancer or problems with them. By the way, there wasn't any eczema and psoriasis and all these things too, because they had enough fats in their diet that prevented those, and zinc. That's a whole nother subject.
Yeah, that's a subject we need to definitely have another show on. I mean, the commercials are just, it's wall to wall. I've never seen so much eczema and psoriasis ever. Right. And so they're, think about, you know, who stands to gain from these things.
Yeah.
And we have to take, and my mantra is take your power back as a patient and as a physician at this point, and stop going the party line. If you're taking medicines and you're sicker, there's something wrong. Right. And if you're prescribing meds and your patients are coming back and they're not better, why don't we start reading and actually stop being lazy, honestly?
Well, I also tell mothers who are, some of them are crazy. They're out there spraying every surface, killing everything. They don't want their kids exposed to germs. All you're doing is making your children weak and sick. Those same kids have endless allergies, asthma, and eczema and psoriasis because their immune systems never develop. Once again, we're designed to be exposed to germs. Kids rolling around in animal feces on farms are healthy as hell. They don't have allergies and asthma and everything else. They're rolling around in dirt like we did when we were kids. You know, it's the way it is. It's the way it should be. You know, and that develops your immune system. You know, we do all the things wrong. We even give babies this soft pablum to eat, this nonsense garbage food, and it doesn't develop their faces. What happens is you don't have to give them steak, but you give them something a little tighter, a little bit else to chew. Baby food's a new development. It's only happened since World War II, really. Mm. You know, and if you give, it's known studies, a guy wrote a great book called Jaws, a dentist or an oral surgeon, I forget what he was, but he wrote a book on facial structure, and he showed that the lack of chewing in childhood and infancy leads to this narrow face and crowded teeth, and similar to what I was talking about earlier, along with dietary changes. But part of it is the mastication or the chewing causes facial structure to develop. It builds muscles in the jaw and spreads out your bones as it pulls on them, and leads to a nice square jaw and a symmetric face, not this pinched weak chin and this overbite that a lot of kids have.
Yeah, well, but they need braces for.
Right, right.
Time goes way too quickly. We're at the end of our time, unfortunately, but you know, we're not done. So I have to. I can't wait till you come back. I'm sure we'll have other topics that we can definitely hit. So for the short term that we have, how can people read your Substacks and follow your writings?
So you go to Substack, which is a great forum because it's uncensored. So there's great medical stuff on here. There's great political stuff on here. It's nice. It's refreshing that some pimple-faced kid working at some Microsoft or somewhere is telling, or YouTube is telling you, nope, censor him. We don't like that. You can say whatever you want. And so there's great medical stuff on here, unbelievable writing. And so you can find me under Medical Underground, that's me, .substack.com. And it's free. I hope you become a paid subscriber, but it's free. And you can, every week I write articles on one subject. I take a deep dive into one subject. But once again, unlike a lot of sites, I tell you the exact doses of stuff you could take for it, and give you different ways to take it and different ways you can help yourself with it. I don't just say this stuff is good, try it. You know, I commit to actually telling you how much you should take. And I write it in layman's terms so you can understand everything.
Oh, Ralph, thank you so much for joining me today. I can't wait to have you back on.
Can't wait to come back, Elena.
Well, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.